I Own Football podcast. This is Will Brinson, Ryan Wilson with me as always. It is Sunday night. You are probably listening on Monday morning because you have a life. And you didn't spend all weekend watching the preseason games. We did, or maybe you did. I mean, I don't know. Preseason's kind of exciting, Ryan, because you have, I mean, there are at least like, you know, some nuanced storylines. We get to overblow. I mean, like, you know, you get to see people climb the depth chart, fall down the depth chart, injuries happen. For instance, EJ Manuel, the would-be Bills starting quarterback who appeared to sew up the starting job against the Vikings, now out for the preseason, has a, quote, minor procedure. I don't buy into minor procedures on his knee and is going to miss the rest of the preseason. Questionable week one starter. Is this doom for the Bills? are the Bills more doomed than they were before?
Right. I think, well, we talked about this last podcast. First of all, we said that EJ Manuel, the first quarterback taken in April's draft, 16th overall, has to start. This isn't a Kevin, I mean, this isn't a jet situation where you have Mark Sanchez making $8.25 million and you just throw him out there and let him take a beating before you go to Geno Smith. Right. You go with EJ Manuel, see what you have. You have some pieces in place in the defense. You have some offensive weapons in the backfield and receiver. Some questions along the offensive line, but that's what Manuel's for. But now that he's hurt, now Doug Marrone, the coach, you're assuming he has to go with Cobb because he doesn't have really any alternative. What's funny though, when you wrote that post on Saturday or Sunday, I don't remember which, a lot of Bills fans, or maybe just Doug Tool fans, I think his name is Doug Tool, the backup to the backup.
Like, yeah, Breach, our boy Breach was tweeting about it.
Is it Doug? Is that his name?
Jeff Tool?
Jeff Tool, my bad, Jeff.
Washington State guy?
Yeah, so Jeff Tool is the third, he's listed third on the depth chart, now he's going to be second, and people were impressed with the way he played. I'll be honest, I didn't watch any of the fourth quarter of the Bills preseason game, so I haven't seen Jeff Tool. So I don't know, maybe that's not it's something to keep an eye on. If Kevin Cobb loses out to Jeff Tool, then that says a lot more about Kevin Cobb, I think, than Tool. But at the end of the day, you know, this is the Bills we're talking about. They're playing in the East. They'll finish better, higher than the Jets, more than likely. Do they win eight games? I don't know. I don't think so. I think ideally you'd like to start the season with Manuel. Now you may have to wait till week two or three or four. But at the end of the day, I think it'll be a kind of a learning experience for Manuel. And maybe next year is when we'll be talking about them as, you know, some up-and-comer.
I think I've been falling for the Bills, like, being a sleeper for the last couple of years. I'm not falling for it this year. I mean, like we were saying, if you're in on EJ Manuel, then, well, it's irrelevant now. But if you were in on EJ Manuel, you were kind of, you know, high on the Bills because they have weapons on both sides of the ball. What weirds me out about this whole thing, and these are from the quotes Doug Marrone gave, and he was I said on Twitter that he was really vague. He was a little bit less vague, I think, if you actually watch the press conference. But he says, I really view this procedure as minor. He won't be here for the preseason, but my expectation is that he will be day-to-day after that. And I get what he's saying, but here's my question with that. So you're not going to watch him play. He's going to have surgery. You're not going to watch him play at all. He's just going to come back in a couple of weeks, and then he's going to be day-to-day. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You don't go suddenly day-to-day. You have to have a timeline, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. But maybe
you can't be like, oh, well, it's Tuesday before week one. Yeah, well, we'll tell you Thursday. I mean, and maybe you can. I don't know.
In a vacuum, medically, maybe he's ready week three. But day to day, relative to Kevin Cobb, could mean, all right, you got to play in the second quarter of the first preseason. Because Kevin Cobb is killing us.
Now, Cobb actually looked okay for the Cardinals in the first couple of games last year before getting hurt. Maybe.
You know who looked okay the first two preseason games for the Browns this year?
Brandon Whedon. He didn't look okay. He looks like a Hall of Famer.
There we go.
No, I meant Cobb in the regular season last year. Remember, Arizona got out to undefeated start. They took down New England.
They sure did that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Seems like 70 years ago. But Cobb was good early on. He threw that one backbreaking pick against the Dolphins.
Not the first time those words have been uttered.
No, and now on the other, you know, to play devil's avocado here, Cobb has been awful with the Bills in preseason.
He slipped on a mat.
That's right. Our buddy Chris Burke tweeted out something from the Bills broadcast against the Vikings. I didn't hear it myself, but it's basically 61% of the snaps that EJ Manuel has taken for the Bills in the preseason have come with like 23 seconds or more left on the play clock. And like it's like 5% of Kevin Cobb's have. In other words, either the Bills are running a totally different offense for Kevin Cobb, which seems unlikely, or Kevin Cobb is not smart enough to diagnose the defenses and to run the offense in a quick enough fashion to be as fast as Doug Marrone likes. And that seems like the more likely answer. So that's a concern.
No, it certainly is. And luckily, you have C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, Stevie Johnson, and they have Robert Woods, who they drafted in the second-round pick this year at USC?
And look, they got Marquise Goodwin, who's kind of a sleeper. Derrick Rogers, who they got as an undrafted free agent, who could be a stud. I mean, my boy T.J. Graham. They've got players. They got players. They have weapons. If they have a quarterback, they can be dangerous.
And that's obviously the big if. You're not going to win with Kevin Cobb. I don't care who's the best team. The Packers, it doesn't matter. San Francisco, Seattle, wherever. Kevin Cobb, you put them on those teams and they win seven games. So
sure.
You have to hope Kevin Cobb can, I don't know, I'm sure you have the schedule in front of you, but let's say they can make through the first two games at 1-1 and bring in E.J. Manuel and see what happens. Maybe he can have a Russell Wilson moment.
Yeah, I don't – E.J. Manuel or Jeff Toole?
Whoever. I mean, you know, whoever you bring in, I'm assuming that E.J. Manuel is the franchise quarterback since they drafted him 60th overall.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it just depends on, like, we don't know what the full deal on the injury is. And, I mean,
was it arthroscopic? I didn't see the details.
That's the thing, Doug. They didn't give any details, and nobody bothered to ask. Like, when he said he's having a minor procedure, why didn't somebody say, what sort of procedure? Is it just a scope? Is it are they replacing his knee? Are they, are they amputating his leg? I mean, what is it? What are the details? So we don't really know. They just said views the procedure as minor. He's not going to play the next couple of weeks. That's standard, I think, even though you're a rookie quarterback. I mean, you want to get him back as soon as possible. So, I mean, their schedule, they're at Washington for the preseason, Detroit for the preseason, New England, they open up at home against the Patriots. If Kevin Cobb's playing that game, adios amigos. That line's
going to be 15. You just said he won last year.
That's true. With the Cardinals' defense, though.
In New England,
that game. That's right. With Arizona, that ruined a lot of survivor pools. And then they get the Panthers at home in week two, travel to the Jets in week three.
All right. So, listen, they could conceivably 1-1 after 2 weeks.
And throw.
If E.J. Manuel's your guy, if he's healthy, you put him out there, I think. Yeah. But who knows? Who knows what Marrone's thinking?
Just to finish my point, though, here's where it gets interesting. All right, so if you don't, let's say he's not available to play the first 2 weeks, and Marrone didn't rule out he could play week one, so he's not available the first 2 weeks. You either throw him out on the road at the Jets, or you start him at home against the Ravens, which sounds like a terrible idea. The week after that, they go to Cleveland and then Cincinnati at home, also a terrible idea. I mean, at that point, you know, you're 5 weeks in, 5 or 6 weeks in, so one would assume that he would be back by then.
Yeah, I don't think – I'm almost at the point where if a miracle upon miracles that the Bills are 5-0 with Kevin Cobb, E.J. Manuel comes back, you put E.J. Manuel in. You didn't draft him to sit on the bench behind Kevin Cobb. This isn't a situation where this is Ryan Mallett and Tom Brady or even, you know, Tim Tebow and Kyle Orton. You want the guy to play immediately, and you put him out there. I mean, he's not going to learn anything by watching Kevin Cobb take – sacks and throw interceptions.
If anybody listening hears a noise, that's me wiping the IPA off my screen after you said Bills might start 5-0.
Right. No, exactly. So that's for me.
Yeah, I mean that's
right, listen.
If Kevin Cobb starts out 5-0, E.J. Manuel ain't got a job. I mean at least until Kevin Cobb loses. I mean that's not happening.
Let's talk about we came out of the gates with the Bills, which is a sure way to everyone's already turned this thing off.
That's right, baby.
But those left still listening, we'll give you another reason to turn it off. So the Bills played the Vikings. Christian Ponder actually was the worst quarterback on the field, I thought, among the starters.
Sure.
Did you see it?
I watched some of it. Ponder just didn't look good. I mean,
he's awesome at throwing short hops.
I don't. But I feel like people expect Ponder to take a step, and I don't really know why.
Well, he came out. He came out in the class with Locker, with Blaine Gabbert.
This class stinks. It was the lockout class. Cam went number one overall, and then you had Locker, Ponder, and Gabbert, who were all pushed up in the draft because people needed quarterbacks. They didn't know what the free agency situation was going to be. And then Dalton and Kaepernick fell because Dalton went to a small school and Kaepernick was – they both went to small schools, and they were people didn't know if they could come out and win.
Dalton had arm strength issues. Kaepernick was raw.
Yeah, but, I mean, Gabbert has – played in spread issues. He stinks, clearly.
Well, we can talk about that because he actually looked good against the Jets.
That's fine. But, I'm not falling for that. Locker has accuracy issues. Had accuracy issues coming out of college. Still does.
Last weekend, whoever they played the Bengals. He was much more accurate, but that's because the ball didn't travel more than 4 yards past the line of scrimmage. Okay, go ahead.
No, and then Ponder. I'm trying to think what like size issues or something like that.
I think there were size issues and also his ability to make all the throws.
Yeah.
No, and, I did, yeah. You know, as a pro, he has size issues, and there are questions about whether he can make all the throws.
And yet here we are, several years into the Christian Ponder experiment, and there's still questions about his size and whether he can make all the throws. I mean,
right. So is this a playoff team, the Vikings in the North?
I don't think so. If you rip the Vikings on Twitter, people will go bananas on you and act like, what are you talking about? How could you? Of course, we're a playoff team. We were there last year. Well, so you know that's nice, but I don't think they're getting back there. I think that division.
Adrian Peterson ran for 2,097 yards last year. I don't think he can do it again. In fact, I mean, if he runs for 1,500 yards, it's a successful season.
Yeah,
so that's 500 yards he's leaving on the table that Christian Ponder desperately needs.
Yeah, I mean, he literally put them on his back.
Yeah.
No, they got weapons. Don't get me wrong, but it's not I don't think that they are a playoff team. I certainly wouldn't bank on that. No, I wouldn't start Matt Castle.
Oh, okay. So listen, the Vikings or the Bears in the North, who has more wins?
I think it's the Bears.
Without an offensive line, they have more.
Yeah, but they got some guys. Kyle Long looked good.
Hey, can he block five people at once?
No, he cannot. Jermon Bushrod was all right. All right. So we're looking at the Vikings at Detroit, at Chicago, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh before their Week 5 bye.
They could be 3-1.
Yes, they could be 0-4.
Yes, that's right. Or 2-2.
Yeah, 2-2 is probably. But I think Detroit's better than people expect. I think that's a very difficult division to predict. People, for some reason, are slotting. I remember the Vikings were a team that a lot of people thought would
awful, yeah,
be terrible last year.
Yeah, I did.
I did too. And they were
awful until Adrian Peterson woke up. Or not that, woke up, but then he
got fully recovered from his knee surgery. He kicked into overdrive and was great. And they've lost. They don't have the quarterback. I just don't buy into Christian Ponder. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. You're not the only one.
I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson and Greg Jennings are nice.
By the way, you know who loves Christian Ponder? Greg Jennings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's been brainwashed.
We'll see how that changes.
You know, you look at their defense, and obviously they have Jared Allen. Greenway's very nice. But, I mean, cornerback Josh Robinson took a nice step last year, and Harrison Smith is good in the secondary. But, I mean, is Xavier Rhodes going to step in and be a difference maker from day one? I mean, maybe. Chris Cook, The defensive line is just I think it's a team that's getting older. They've managed to kind of get give them credit. They've managed to do a nice job rebuilding reloading without totally rebuilding.
What you're trying to say is that they've done a great job restocking the roster, getting lucky and winning some games.
That's right. That's right. Because I thought that they were in the middle of a full blown rebuild post Favre years when they shoved chips in the center, went for it. I think they got lucky last year.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to regress.
Why is Sharif Floyd listening to this on the third team?
I don't know. He you would think he ends up starting. I mean, our lads isn't official. They're very good, but they're not official.
All right. All right, that's enough about the – I mean, we're Bills, Vikings out of the gate. What's next? Spice it up here.
So that's right, kids. You're 14 minutes into this podcast, and we've talked Vikings and Bills. I mean, does this just require a throw out of a Tim Tebow just to figure out if
almost certainly.
Yeah. Almost certainly, yeah. If you're not scared yet, you will be scared when we talk about a Tim Tebow. By the way, actually, Sharif Floyd is third on the depth chart, on the Vikings' unofficial depth chart.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. Tim Tebow played on Friday for the Patriots as they – golly, I just blacked out on who they played against.
They played against the Bucs, right?
Yeah, the Buccaneers. That's right. Yeah, sorry.
That's the team that tried to kill Tom Brady.
I've watched a lot of preseason games last.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Adrian Claiborne tried to kill Tom Brady. So, yeah, the Bucs and Patriots played. Obviously, the most important thing was Tebow's performance. He ended up going – I mean, it's not, I'm being sarcastic, but he went 1 of 7 for -1 yards in the preseason.
Let me tell you what I did. I didn't see the game live. I went back and watched Tom Brady's performance. I skipped over Ryan Mallett, and I wanted to see what Tim Tebow did because I used to do Tebow Tracker, as everyone on the planet knows. It's one of the lowlights of my life. But so I turned to Tebow's first snap.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, we're bringing that back this year.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. First snap of Tebow's night against the Bucks. He does a quarterback draw for a few yards, I think. The next play is I think the receivers were in a go route. Tebow throws like an out and misses him by about 40 yards. And I turn off. I said, forget it. I can't watch this. I know how this movie ends. It's a complete utter disaster. And lo and behold, went for 7 for -1 yards.
Sure.
Yeah, and a pick. I didn't see the pick. How was the pick?
He's terrible. I mean, he's terrible. No. He didn't have a pick. It was a drop pick.
What does that mean?
I think. Did he throw a pick?
It's listed on the stats as an interception.
Oh, then maybe he should have had 2 picks.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, because he definitely had a streak. He had like, I'm trying to think who it was. Somebody had a streak down the field. Tebow uncorked it, tried to throw it as deep as humanly possible. Came up like short. The only reason the Buccaneers defensive back dropped it is because I think he was so surprised. Like, he's like, whoa, how did that not get behind me? Hits him in the hands, like falls down. Tebow was getting sacked at the time.
I have this vision of Tebow trying out for high school basketball, maybe junior high basketball. And he's so fast. He's the type of guy when he shoots free throws, and he's so inaccurate that he actually shoots the ball over the backboard from the free throw line.
Yeah.
That's the type of basketball player Tebow is in my mind.
Yeah, you're right. All right, yeah. Tim Tebow passed deep middle intended for Kimbrel Thompkins, intercepted by Michael Robinson at the 50. So, yeah, I mean, he won a 7.
That's Michael Robinson, the fullback for the Seahawks. He caught it all the way to
Seattle. Yeah, exactly. He was on a plane on the way to, or you know, wherever he was. We kid about the Tebow thing, but it was a disaster. The reality is he might end up getting cut somehow.
Well, I was going to say, does he make a team, and is that a surprise if he doesn't?
No, I don't think so. And I think the bigger issue, if you're Bill Belichick, you look at this and say, well, first of all, you say, crap. I've got Tom Brady. I've got Ryan Mallett back there. I don't love Mallett. I'd like to trade Mallett if possible, but, you know, whatever. Tebow's not a guy that, I mean, I think you can set him free and get him back whenever you want, if necessary, you know?
What do you need him for, though? He can't play quarterback.
Right. Well, I mean,
God forbid Brady gets hurt and then Mallett has to go in.
But the idea behind having Tebow is that Josh McDaniels, your offensive coordinator, thought enough of him to draft him. You can develop him. It's a long-term play. But I think he's been so bad that it's not even, like, worth gambling on.
No, it's not. Why? I don't understand. And Belichick admitted last week at some point, early last week, that you have to run 2 offenses for Tebow. He admitted that. Yeah. And, of course, later he said, I'm not saying that Tebow's on the final roster, but this is the situation we're in right now. He wasn't speaking negatively of Tebow.
He said he was competing with Ryan Mallett for the backup spot. That's laughable.
he was saying that, you know, you have to maximize a player's skills. And for Tebow, that's not a lot of passing. So yeah, that's a lot of time that you spend in practice wasting on some almost
cursed plays you will never run.
That's right. So here's the other question. If Tebow gets cut, who picks him up, if anyone?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Not until somebody gets hurt. So the real story about their quarterbacks actually was that Tom Brady, who had a knee scare earlier in the week, was totally fine. 11 of 12, 2 incompletions on the preseason so far, 1 touchdown, 192 yards, I think. And he looked, frankly, he looked pissed off during that Bucs game. And rightfully so, because he spent, you know, all offseason, people have been talking about how he's, you know, the Patriots are done. He's done, you know,
Not me either.
I haven't said that either. But, I mean, a lot of people have. People are like, oh, well, Aaron Hernandez is gone. Wes Welker's gone. Robert Gronkowski's hurt. The Patriots are finished. There's no chance that they can win. So you just go and write them off and blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And
tell you what, Amendola will look a much faster version of Wes Welker. He just has to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. If he's Zach Sudfeld.
Out of nowhere, tight end. Another guy who's had injury issues, but out of nowhere, just making plays. It's amazing.
Yeah, and like doing the – yeah, I mean, this it's a team that you see Shane Vereen's making plays. He can, you know, he caught four balls in the in that preseason game. Sudfeld, two balls, 32 yards, one touchdown. Amendola, six balls, 71 yards. If Amendola is healthy, he is going to have an absolutely enormous season.
He might have 200 receptions.
Yeah, I mean, like, he, like, legit, he's on pace for like 60 in the preseason.
So, again, you know, this, their Patriots defense maybe has some questions, but this team's winning 11 games.
And their defensive line looked great. They were destroying Josh Freeman in the ones. Chandler Jones was everywhere. I think he's in for, I don't want to say like a defensive player of the year type season, but
you know what? He could have an Alden Smith type season, though.
Exactly.
If he gets help on the other side, he could just be out there terrorizing people and, you know, making a huge difference in that way. Hey, what did Rondae Barber say about Josh Freeman?
Oh, yeah. Walter Chapinski of WalterFootball.com. He says Rondae Barber is basically, golly, now I got to go fight it. What did he say? He said something like,
he's not a leader.
I think we all know Josh Freeman can't lead that offense. It's like, wait, dude, you.
But he's not even the barber that's the.
Yeah, why are you Tiki? Why are you, and I'm just kidding. I like Tiki. He's my boy. But why are you Tikiing this, Rondé?
Why is Tiki your boy?
We hung out. Josh Freeman can't carry that offense by himself. We all know that. He's prone to mistakes. Said Rondé Barber, his old teammate. What a jerk.
Well, see, that's a very diplomatic way of saying what Tiki would have said was, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
So
I think Rondé said that, not Tiki. I like Josh Freeman. I think he's underrated.
I used to. Oh, no, absolutely not. 3 years ago, yes. I'm now well off the Josh. Listen, when.
Do you know how old Josh Freeman is?
What's that?
Do you know how old he is?
He might be 23. It doesn't matter.
He's 25. He's still young, man. He hadn't even hit his
prime. Blaine Gabbert's 23, and you gave up on him 3 years ago.
Fair enough. Freeman's at least like flash, though.
Oh, he's hard to watch. He does make a lot of mistakes. And Rondé, I think, was very diplomatic in explaining that. Look, when Raheem Morris. I think Raheem Morris was there when they drafted Freeman. If not, he was at Kansas State when Freeman played there. He said he.
No, Morris was at Kansas State and at Tampa. Morris's first year when they drafted Freeman.
Okay, so right. So he was there in college.
He's still better than Sanchez.
Of course. Yeah, Tebow's better than Sanchez. But Raheem Morris compared Freeman to Ben Roethlisberger's style. And the first year and a half, I saw that. Now I just see a guy who seems like he's got way too much going on above the shoulders and, you know, struggles to make good decisions frequently.
I would like, if I was the general manager of a team like Arizona or Cleveland.
He might fit in Bruce Arians' offense.
No, I'm just saying, if I was Steve Keim or whoever the hell is running the play, Lombardi, I guess, in Cleveland, I would be hoping that Josh Freeman had a bad season this year and that the Bucs let him walk and that he hit free agency. Because you don't see
a bad season would quickly resolve itself in Cleveland the next year.
No, but you can get a 25-year-old potential franchise quarterback as a free agent for a discount price, and you wouldn't have to sign him to like a 5-year, $100 million deal or anything.
He's not going to come cheap. That's the thing I think that people get hung up on. Like, these guys have quote unquote off years, but they're still young and still have potential. He's not going to come. He's not going to get Joe Flacco money, but he's not going to sign a 5-year, $50 million deal either.
No, I would think he would sign a 2-year, 2 or 3-year deal. You know, I mean, he's not going to sign like a 1-year prove it deal, obviously.
Right? Is he that much better than Brandon Whedon?
Yeah. I think so.
Josh Freeman for 2 years and he stinks for 2 years, and then you're right back where you were when you canned Brandon Whedon 3 years before that.
He's like 6 years younger than Brandon Whedon.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're 27, and then you're back to the starting point of where you need another quarterback. Again, we're talking about the Browns.
Yeah,
I don't know how this happens every show.
I'm higher on Freeman than other people. I think he's going to be better. Now, while we're talking about him, Glennon, actually, my boy Mike Glennon.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, hell yeah, you were. He actually looked good.
That's a thing. He has looked good, and you know, Gate, if he's starting, I don't think I would be shocked, would you?
No, and the other thing, I pointed this out, was Glennon's pocket presence from even, like, his pocket presence at the Combine in the Senior Bowl, which is, you know, if you're not – nobody's chasing you there, really, has dramatically improved. He looked much more willing to stand in the pocket, much more confident, and I think it boils down a lot to coaching And it boils down a lot to having an offensive line that actually blocks for you, which he didn't have at NC State. And that
nice backhanded compliment to NC State's coaches, by the way.
No, I Glennon's been very kind about the development of his development in a pro style system. I think they did him horribly wrong. If you go back and watch the Clemson game or the Florida State, or so the Florida State game, the huge win, supposed to be his coming out party, right? He has a couple series in the second half when NC State's down, runs the no huddle, runs it really, really well, and then, like, the rest of the season, they don't run it. They just go back to this bland, you know, quote, pro-style offense that's trying to run the ball when you don't have running backs or an offensive line instead of letting your, you know, potential, you know, NFL-caliber quarterback and your top recruit, your top player, wing the ball. I thought it was stupid.
Chipped him. I don't ever have done that.
No, he wouldn't have. He would have chucked his chest, would have cut it loose. The point being, I think Glennon has developed, and that's something to watch in terms of Freeman, because if he develops into a, you know, a legitimate, even if he's just back sitting on a bench and learning and watching and kind of getting better, then I think Shiano and Dominic might be willing to move on from Freeman.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I'm not sold on Freeman. He's sort of been disappointing in the last year and a half.
Okay, speaking of moving on, Dustin Keller moved on from the Jets to the Dolphins in the offseason, and he will be probably moving on somewhere else now that he has unfortunately suffered a season-ending ACL, MCL, PCL, and knee dislocation injury on a hit from DJ Swearinger. Very controversial hit on Saturday night. Swearinger,
you know, Wait a second. Let me ask you. Who says it's controversial? People on Twitter, right? No one in the media. Is anyone in the media saying it's controversial?
It's, yeah, but media people on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, I mean.
It's idiotic. Well, give me some names, because I want to yell at these people.
Me?
Tell me, you thought it was controversial?
No, all right, let me explain. I don't think it's controversial in the sense
here,
that.
Explain the hit, so people have.
Okay, so Dustin Keller catches the ball, plants his right leg, turns to start running upfield. DJ Swearinger comes in. Puts DJ Swearinger's helmet on Dustin Keller's knee. Dustin Keller's knee explodes into 1,000 pieces. He lies on the ground, rips off his helmet, starts crying to the trainers. Understandably, DJ Swearinger's kind of like walking around awkwardly because he knows he just blew up somebody's life. Yeah. It's only controversial in that it was a major injury caused to a reasonably big name skill position player by a defender who led with his helmet. And the debate here, and I think Pete Prisco is right on this. He says you ask these players, these offensive players, 9 out of 10 guys, and maybe more than 9 out of 10 would prefer to suffer a concussion than to suffer that knee injury.
Yeah. So where's the controversy? The controversy is with the NFL for making these rules.
That's what I'm saying. No. I'm not saying the controversy is with DJ Swearinger.
Okay.
The issue here is that the NFL is like, all right, no helmet to helmet hits. And Swearinger said afterwards, he said, look, you know, I'm told if I leave my helmet, I get a fine, I get in trouble. So I go low. I'm really sorry. And did you see his tweet? His tweet, by the way.
No.
DJ Swearinger tweet. I goes, you know, wasn't intentional. You know, obviously don't want to hurt anybody. Thoughts and prayers go out to Justin Keller.
Nice.
Yeah, Justin Keller. So
stupid fat hands.
It's controversial in that, like, yeah, exactly. That's something that happens to me. DJ Swearinger blew up somebody's leg, you know, put his career at risk in order to avoid giving a helmet-to-helmet hit. And you have to wonder, A, you know, is that really, you know, if you're trying to make players safer and you're trying to improve player safety, are you really doing it by having people avoid the head? You know what I mean? Like, when you can just blow up knees? And B, what's going to happen when you're not allowed to hit knees and all of a sudden you have a very small – I'm serious. You have a very small strike zone between the knees and the chest that you can hit as a defender.
It's like being a pitcher in baseball.
Exactly.
No, I wrote about this 2 years ago when the Steelers played the Broncos in the playoff game, the Tim Tebow Magic game, and James Harrison went low on Eric Decker and blew up his knee.
They showed that earlier, yeah.
Not to the extent that Kelly had, but he was out for the rest of the game. And John Elway came out the next day and said, listen, that's a perfectly legal hit because that's what the NFL decided that these players are now allowed to do. Now, the year before in 2010 is when the NFL went, you know, bat crap crazy about all these finding players and throwing them out of games and all this other stuff. And it started with James Harrison obliterating the Browns. So,
but it was that weekend. No, it was before Harrison, wasn't it? It was a weekend where it was Merriweather and Dunter Robinson blew up that Deshaun Jackson.
It was week six. Massaquan and Josh Cribbs got blown up by Harris.
Yeah, that's right.
That may have been the same time that Merriweather blew up Todd Heap.
Yep.
And I don't know who the other one was.
I mean, Merriweather should have headbutted Todd Heap, too.
No, that was a flagrant. I think the thing is, James Harrison got fined more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than Merriweather, I think. I could be wrong. But anyway, no, the point is, going low is now part of the game. So these things are going to happen. And I think Prisco's exactly right. Because a concussion, you know, your brain is going to explode into 1,000 pieces. Your knee will.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you get a concussion, it really, really sucks. But you know what? If you have that concussion, you're still going to be able to make money the next year. Dustin Keller,
you'll be able to make money in 2 or 3 weeks.
Dustin Keller took a one-year prove-it deal because he thought he could go to Miami, play with a quarterback not named Mark Sanchez, actually put up some stats, actually get a big contract. He turned down a longer contract with the Dolphins because he wanted to try and get one big one in free agency, and now he's, you know, effectively screwed.
So speaking of prove-it deals, Mike Wallace got $60 million over 6 years.
I think isn't he in an effort deal? I don't think that's a prove-it deal.
Yeah, that's right. Effort money deal.
Yeah.
He didn't play in the first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game, but the two other since he has 3 catches for 58 yards and 1 touchdown. And before you comment on his performance thus far and what we should expect from him, I will say this. I watched the first series of the Dolphins game. I believe the second play is a passing play. He was supposed to run a slant, got jammed the line of scrimmage. Tannehill had a double pump and took a sack. So, he struggles to get off the line of scrimmage. Tomlin used to call him a one-trick pony because he can run really straight in a fast line, not do much else in terms of running routes. Is he worth $60 million?
Hell no.
We're going to have this conversation every week, by the way.
That's fine with me. I've been saying it was a terrible deal since they signed him. It was like they outbid themselves too. You know, like it's not even they didn't. You know what I mean? They didn't even like have any competition for him. There were rumors.
30-yard catch, and he had a nice touchdown catch. Nothing that other, you know, number one wide receivers on any team in the league couldn't have done. But at the same time, you know, we're still in the vanilla phase of the preseason, so certainly there's more to come.
I'm not concerned for the Dolphins. I'm happy for my well-being as an NFL analyst because I believe the Dolphins will stink, and I will predict they'll stink, and they will stink, and then I'll look good. Dolphins fans won't like that, I guess, but I don't care. And our boy Robert Griebel, I'm sorry, buddy. You know, our podcast.
I will say this. I like Ryan Tannehill.
I love Ryan Tannehill. I think he's good, but they didn't – It was like the classic, like off season for a team that doesn't get it, and that and like the people who are running the team are worried about their jobs. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I think Jeff Allen is worried about his job.
He is worried about his job,
and that's how he's general managing.
Yes, he's managing to try and save his job for at least another year because if the Dolphins make the playoffs, he shoves all in. You know, says screw it on the future. If I get like best case, we make the playoffs. I keep my job for another year. You know, maybe sign a new contract, keep the job for 3 years. Worst case is I get fired, and the next dude is screwed by you know what I left him in cap hell and all that stuff. So yes, Ryan Tannehill is very good. Maybe Lamar Miller will work out, but they don't have an offensive line to really protect Tannehill or block for Miller.
And then
Pouncey's good, but Jonathan Martin's not going to be a franchise left tackle.
Richie Incognito's just a penalty waiting to happen.
Yeah. They don't really have any cornerbacks. I worry about him.
No, they have Brent Grimes. Now, whether he's healthy or not is another issue. He was good in Atlanta before he got
there. There's a reason Atlanta let him walk.
Well.
Because Atlanta needed quarterbacks, and they let him walk.
Maybe, but they also invested all that money into Julio Jones, so maybe –
I think Atlanta would have kept Grimes because they could have kept Grimes around for cheap on a shorter deal. I think they know something.
I don't think he signed for cheap in Miami. I don't know the terms of the deal, but I don't think it was cheap. But again, like
he sat on the market forever. I'm looking up his contract now. Okay. He signed a 1 year deal with Miami.
Okay. All right. I was wrong.
Dirt cheap. Fine.
All right. Yeah. So we're not sold on the Dolphins. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah. But to answer your question, no, Mike Wallace is not a complete receiver. He's not.
Okay, let's on the record. Give me some totals for 16 games.
For Mike Wallace?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
I'll start first.
You go ahead.
Injury-free.
Yeah.
We'll assume he plays.
Yeah, assuming injury-free.
10 catches, 110 yards, 1 touchdown.
for 16, all 16 games?
No, I'm underselling.
Obviously a joke, yeah.
Trying to rationalize him leaving Pittsburgh. So go ahead.
I thought you were going to go first. I'll go first. All right, we'll say all 16 games. You know, I honestly think that something along the lines of 2012 is totally possible.
I was just thinking 6,810.
Yeah, I'll go 6,909.
Yeah,
that's not worth it.
That's nice.
And actually, you know what might be more accurate for Mike Wallace, given what they have in terms of Brian Hartline and Brandon Gibson and who else do they have there catching passes from Tannehill? That's it? Is that it? Yeah. Didn't they sign somebody else?
I thought Sean Matthews. Who are these guys? Jeff Fuller.
No, yeah, it's Fuller's that A&M kid that was boys with Tannehill back in the day. No, it's Gibson, Hartline, and Mike Wallace.
That's it.
I'm going to go down. All right, I'll go 55, 950, 10.
And you know what? Now they don't have a tight end, so that's going to be even more attention paid to Mike Wallace.
But I don't think – it's like you were, so we were saying. I don't think Mike Wallace is going to be some guy that picks up a pile of catches. That's not the offense they're going to run. They're going to – I think they'll try and use him deep. It won't work. You know, that's where he'll make his money is going deep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. So, okay. We'll just have to assume that the Dolphins do that going in.
What if he does his – I mean, if he puts up his 2010 season or 2011 season, is he worth that $60 million? 1,200 yards, 72 catches, 8 touchdowns in 2011.
Yeah, and the thing is, in 2011, he did more than just those numbers because defenses were really concerned about him.
That's true. That's when Antonio Brown blew up.
Antonio Brown went nuts. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the offensive coordinator changed. Don't the Dolphins run a West Coast scheme? Did they run West Coast?
Philbin and Sherman's scheme.
Yeah. That's not.
Why are you hiring? Why would you want Mike Wallace for a West Coast scheme?
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's going to be an ill-fitting situation. Todd Haley has some kind of West Coast concepts in what he does, and that was a train wreck with Wallace. He just kind of shut down even before he got there.
Yeah, you want Wallace in a Bruce Arians system where you're Mike, like you said, running a straight line, buddy.
And yeah, then this dude, Al Davis system.
Yeah, and send him deep and let him beat people deep, and he's a monster. He can make – I mean, remember he had that nice play last year. I mean, like, he can be a dangerous guy in the red zone if he needs to be.
The Giants game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is not his game.
Well, yeah, we'll see. So, all right, what else we got? We're not sold on Mike Wallace still. It's early. So,
down on Mike Wallace. Broncos, Seahawks.
Let me tell you, I watched this game – I didn't watch it live, but rewatched it this morning on Sunday morning.
It started way too late for you.
Seattle fans need to settle down. It's a preseason game. They were going. They thought it was a Super Bowl the way they were.
Dude, that was. I'll say this, I tweeted this, but they I feel like I'm just repeating things I say on Twitter, which I'm sorry about. But I tweeted out when that game started. It didn't feel like a real. It didn't feel like a preseason game.
No, but, it was insane.
I love that though. It felt like the first real football game, and it felt freaking awesome.
Comedian Bill Burr has this bit where he just kills Seattle fans because he said if you're going to name someone the 12th man, it shouldn't be anyone but the architect for building that stadium to make it so loud because they're regular fans that are just from having a stadium that's acoustically better than any other stadium in the league.
Right.
And I think that was clear and evident against the Broncos. That said, the Broncos I thought were thoroughly outplayed. I mean, I don't know. The defense, the Seattle's defense was just dominating. I thought Peyton Manning looked okay. But I think you pointed this out, too. The biggest issue for the
pass pro was
one. And number two, if Peyton doesn't have a running game, he's toast.
He's fine without a running game. He needs somebody. I mean, like, he
needs a running game to set up everything else he does. Because
he needs somebody who can run out of the shotgun. That's why it's so surprising that they let Willis McGahee go.
Yeah, no, that's right.
McGahee was perfect for that offense. I should have given him one more year. I tell you what, I ultimately think that we will see Knowshon Moreno take that starting job.
Ugh. Another of Josh McDaniels' wonderful picks.
Knowshon was good down the stretch last year, even though after they kind of forgot him. Ronnie Hillman, 13 carries, 34 yards.
He's too little.
Did you see that picture I threw in that post?
Yeah, you ripped it off from NFL.com, didn't you?
it was literally the home cover on NFL.com.
Yeah.
It's just Hillman diving over the the plane and just losing the ball. Well, that's not going to fly with John Fox. He's definitely not going to
– Listen, he got right in the hands. It wasn't like he just threw the ball over the goal line. But fair enough. You can't lose the ball anywhere on the field, much less as you're trying to score a touchdown.
Correct.
Wait a second. Let me ask you this. Ronnie Hillman, we agree, is a small guy. How is it that every
I want you to go look at this post again. Are you sure? Because, I mean, he looks like it's just him floating with the ball.
Yeah. Who's just below him? Who's the Seattle player? I think a linebacker. Like, it might have been Bobby Wagner. Hit him right
I guess so.
Hit him right in the hands.
But anyway, the headline was Butterfingers. I just found that amusing.
Yeah. How is it that Monty Ball is struggling? Like, no rookie first or second round running back ever struggles. They come in right away. He has a lot of success.
He can run the ball, but he sucks at pass protection. And that's the difference when
you're talking. Ronnie Hillman ain't blocking anybody.
Exactly. No, Sean Moreno is the only guy who can. I'm telling
you. You know who else can? Willis McGahey.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the thing with it. Doesn't Monty Ball can do whatever he wants touchdown wise from college. He can grind out as many yards as he wants, and he can be as good a running back as it didn't matter. It's all irrelevant if he can't pass block for Peyton Manning, because if Peyton Manning gets like tattooed one time and his neck pops off, Broncos are done.
Yep.
And they won't risk that. I mean, you'd rather have a guy who can pass. You'd rather pull Ryan Clady off the line and set him next to Peyton Manning in the backfield and have him just kind of watching out.
Ryan Clady sidecar.
That's right. I mean, you would rather do that, or like put Wes Welker in the backfield. He could at least pass block. So I worry about that. That'd be interesting.
So listen, we've talked in the past about either Seattle or San Francisco coming back to the pack in the West. I'm no longer convinced Seattle's in that conversation after Washington play.
They're fine.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think the defense is
how bad. Good. How good was that? And I know you're going to accuse me. I mean, I was watching this with some. I was watching the Saturday night game with some friends. We cooked out.
Weren't you working Saturday?
Yeah, I was. I had my laptop out. I was working. I was watching football. What do you mean?
No fun's allowed, though. You have to be hunkered down. Oh,
God, yeah, all I did was have fun, man. Plus, we know our boss didn't listen to this. Anyway, so it was all NC State guys. By the end of the halftime, it's one of the guys, I'm taking Russell Wilson fifth pick overall in our fantasy draft. It's something sort of ridiculous.
I love State guys. The guy went to Wisconsin. He
did. F you, dude. You're done. I'll have you. Something. I don't know what I'm going to have done. Anyway.
How can you pay me less than zero to do this podcast?
That's right. The play where he fumbled the snap and then whipped a pass to Curse really exhibited to me what – I think that's one of those things that gets lost in is why Russell Wilson – people didn't see that when they were trying to evaluate him for the draft. They thought about his height, and they didn't see the plays that he makes – football intelligence, big enough arm to make the play, smart enough to know, you know, to know to make that throw. You don't see a lot of quarterbacks do that.
I was thinking more about the way the defense played in the office, but I'll say this. I'm not convinced yet, not just Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, I am convinced. Russell Wilson, RG3, and Colin Kaepernick, they're all basically second-year players.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that they're all going to have as strong a season as they had last season, just because defenses now know what they're doing. Now, athleticism overcomes a lot, and that includes all three of these guys. But at some point, you know, the breaks go the other way. Russell Wilson should have had at least one pass picked off in that game.
Sure.
But, you know, it didn't happen, but that's sort of being lucky. Just like, you know, you can say that about Brandon Brown. Brandon Brown, is that his name, Brandon?
Yeah, Brandon Brown. He got
returning the touchdown 104 yards on that stupid Hillman fumble.
Right.
But
I agree with you. I think one of Luck, RG3, Russell, or Kaepernick is going to come back to the pack.
Not Luck. I think Luck will be. I think that they might win six games, but he'll put up some pretty impressive numbers.
No, he will. But here's the difference: his counting stats are going to be smaller.
Yeah.
Fine. And he's going to be more efficient. But people will see that as a kind of a regression in a weird way. Week 15 or 16, I'll write some piece where people are wondering, you know, the Colts aren't as good, you know, as a team. They're not winning as many games. Andrew Luck's stats aren't as big. Is he struggling? Even though he was struggling at the end of last year. I'm telling you, this will happen. It's going to happen because he's going to be more efficient. He's not going to be chunking it down the field in Bruce Arians' offense. Now, that being said, Kaepernick doesn't have Crabtree. One of them has to come back. They can't all four keep exceeding expectations.
RG3 hasn't played in 6 months.
It's going to be because of injury or something of that nature. People forget that the three guys we're talking about too, not excluding Luck, the three guys we're talking about in RG3, Russell, and Kaepernick all play for teams that are run heavy offenses. These guys are like Shanahan, Pete Carroll, and Jim Harbaugh aren't suddenly going to abandon the run just because they have great quarterbacks. They're going to be running the hell out of the ball.
Right. Hey, let me ask you this. I was talking to our buddy Bob Haney, who's at 105.7, the Fan in Baltimore, and he said, "Is Mike Shanahan on the hot seat?" What would you say to that?
What? No.
That's what I said.
Sorry, I assumed that was going to be longer, so I muted myself to drink a sip of beer.
He's
not on the hot seat.
Rex Ryan is. I said, as long as he has RG3, he's fine. But I think the thinking is if RG3, has some sort of blow up again, knee blow up, that is, I think.
So are Cousins. I think it's literally impossible for Mike Shanahan to get fired this year.
I agree. No, that's what I said. I said, I don't think this media manufactured blow up has anything to do with it, because I don't think it's a blow up at all. I think the worst thing that RG3 did was after his regular Monday press conference, held another one on Tuesday saying, "I'm not mad at Mike Shanahan." Yep. We knew that. I mean, why would no one thinks you should play the preseason except you, and that's fine, but you're not going
to
play.
Yeah, and you're just trying to be enthusiastic. So Shanahan was in the hot seat going into last year. He cranked up the heat on his seat, too, when he went out and made a big trade for RG3, but he makes the playoffs.
Wait. He cranked it up even hotter. He cranked it all the way up, the seat warmers all the way up to 10 when he said, "I'm giving up on the season," midway through the season.
Oh, God, that's right. That happened.
That's right.
Oh, my God, he gave up on the season. We need to revisit. I'm going to write a note to revisit that.
So that was awesome.
God, I forgot all about that. They were.
He wants you to.
God, I remember writing that. He's like, he said, "I give up." Wait, what week was that? It was like week six.
Yeah, it was pretty. Well, I don't know.
No, you're right, because I remember looking at the schedule and the Reds
like 4-7 or something.
That. But the Redskins started getting a little warm. You looked at the schedule and it was like, wait a minute, these guys could backdoor this division. We all forget that now. Huh? I mean, don't we? You didn't, obviously. Yeah.
Well, I never expected to be asked about Shanahan being on the hot seat, so it sort of came back then. But right, no one thinks about it now because it's RG3.
Yeah, God, you're right. Yeah, so, I mean, but look, here's what could happen is the Redskins start out and go 4-7, which is not implausible.
No.
They go 4-7. Shanahan gets put back on the hot seat.
No, for next year.
He's not
fair enough.
He's not locked in. I mean, let me tell you something. If the Redskins start out 0-4, you're going to have questions. Everything's going to be about every single damn article is going to be about are RG3 and Shanahan fighting.
Those articles will start with, should RG3 have been playing in Seattle last January?
That's right. Yeah, and if he'd played in the preseason, would the Redskins be here?
Oh God,
it's so predictable. It's awesome. I mean, that's just that's how it works.
All right, so he's not on the hot seat. The guy who is on the hot seat, we agree, is Rex Ryan.
Yes.
But in that Jets-Jaguars game, two quarterbacks who did not struggle. What are your takeaways from the awesome nights of Mark Sanchez and Blaine Gabbert?
Was Sanchez that awesome? I was hammered at a cookout, so I don't know.
He was 10 of 13. I think he threw a touchdown pass.
He was okay. Yeah. 13, Mark Sanchez?
What was he?
13 of 23.
Oh. Nah,
not awesome.
That's 10 of 13 for the quarterbacks.
That's right. One touchdown, one pick. Bilal Powell actually had seven carries for 68 yards, one for 37.
I tell you, Blaine Gabbert actually looked really good. They ran a no-huddle offense. He was sharp. And I'm guessing maybe the fact that he had fewer decisions to make helped him not be so hesitant in the pocket.
Not going to fall for it. He did this last year against the Saints. He ripped him up, and I thought he was going to have a good year, and I got his back. I'm not doing it.
All right, fair enough. I'm just trying to pump him up a little bit.
No.
Nothing?
No. Right. Here's the thing with Sanchez. And I think Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, whose name I always pronounce even when I'm like talking to him, and I feel bad about that, he hit the nail on the head when he said that John Idzik and Rex Ryan, and I think we all know this, they want different things when it comes to this quarterback competition.
One wants snacks. Oh, right.
Okay. One wants snacks. One wants to fire Rex. Right. Rex obviously wants Sanchez to win. He feels Geno's not his guy. Yeah, I mean, he's invested. He picked Sanchez. Rex is confident enough, probably too confident to believe he can win with Sanchez, that he can coach up that defense, and he wants Sanchez to win. He wants to go down with the ship. I'm fine with that. Idzik obviously wants Geno to win because Geno's his guy. He drafted him. He wants to see Geno play. He wants to find out if he's the guy, because very likely the Jets are going to have a decision next year in the top 5 or 10 picks. I'm serious, on whether or not they need to take a quarterback that high if there's a good one there. Because, Geno's a second-round pick. Ask the Panthers. That's a throwaway if there's a guy there that's worth it, right? Jimbo?
Ask the Panthers. Jimbo? I mean, that's the worst thing you could say.
Jimbo?
Reliability. I know Jimbo, but what happened?
But who cares? It's a second-round.
What's his name, the GM?
Marty Herney. But he was right on Cam. My point is if you took a quarterback in the second round, you're not beholden to starting that quarterback, even though Geno is considered a, quote, first-round quarterback.
Is right twice a day. Don't give the Marty Herney how to build a franchise routine.
All I'm saying, look, Marty Herney, we go off on a tangent about what Marty Herney could have done. I'm serious. All right, so if he takes Patrick Peterson and A.J. Green at number one, the Panthers probably are, and they start Jimmy Clausen in 2011. How bad is that team with Jimmy Clausen in his second year? They finished with the worst record in the league, way worse than the Colts. They land Andrew Luck. They have A.J. Green or Patrick Peterson. You know, it's a weird rabbit hole to go down.
It's depressing if you're a Panthers fan.
Sure. So anyway, my point being is that Idzik wants Geno to play. But I thought Manish did a good job of breaking down how Idzik blew up his own quarterback competition by getting Geno out there in practice. You know, Geno hurt his ankle against the Lions. They force him back out there in practice anyway. Rex, he obviously looks brutal because he's gimping around on a bad ankle. Rex is able to come out and say he looks brutal, justify not playing him last week over the weekend of the preseason. Mark Sanchez, it doesn't look great. But now there's only a limited amount of time to actually play Geno and give him the job.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual dynamics are between Rex Ryan and John Idzik, but I hope it's some sort of power struggle.
It's absolutely a power struggle. Match,
and they somehow lose more than the 12 games they lost last year.
I wouldn't sleep on the Jets to be staring at down the decision. Do we take Jadeveon Clowney or Teddy Bridgewater?
Worse than the Chargers.
You would think not.
And the Jets won 10 games last year.
The Chargers aren't worse than the Raiders, by the way.
I'm pushing that. That's my line. I'm pushing that they are.
Yeah, but did you see, and I'll get back to the Idzik thing in just one second, but did you see the Raiders-Saints game Friday?
I heard that.
Do you know how many times Matt Flynn was sacked in the first half by the Saints? Five. Matt Flynn was sacked 5 times in the first half of a preseason game against historically the worst defense of all time last year.
Did you ever think that the Raiders were working on and long situations?
I mean, Oakland's just waltzing into Teddy Bridgewater or Clowney. They're going to have the choice. I think
not if the Chargers have anything to say about it.
I know. No, and here's the crazy thing is the Raiders play the Jets. Ugh. The Raiders play the Chargers twice. Ugh. And the Raiders play the Jaguars once.
There you go. I mean,
that's 4 wins.
From the clowny for clowny right there.
All right. But 5.5 wins is the Raiders over under on.
Well under.
Yeah.
I'm half joking about the Chargers. I mean, things to go right for the Chargers, they could win 8 games. Things go wrong.
Hell no, no, no. I think the Chargers' ceiling is like, although the Chargers might get, I think the Chargers get the Jets too. Chargers' ceiling is like 6, I think.
No, I think the Raiders in my heart are worse, but I'm sticking with the Chargers just for, you know, Phillip Rivers.
No, I like your decision to get on that ship and ride it. Same place Mark Sanchez is riding. Rex. Anyway, the one thing I was going to add about Geno, John Idzik, and Rex Ryan is that I think when people do this this setup where you have a new GM who comes in and you have a coach hang around for an extra year with 1 year left on his contract, the GM doesn't get to pick his coach. I don't like it. I don't care for it.
No, it's a horrible way to run an organization, and yeah. I'm sure it'll play itself out this year.
I mean, like the Panthers are doing that right now with Dave Gettleman and Ron Rivera. Even though I think Ron Rivera, there's an argument he deserves, he deserves to be back. I'm saying there's an argument he deserves to be back this year.
Yeah, his wife's making that argument.
Well, Jerry Richardson made the argument as well. I think you need to, if you're running a team, you need to say, if you're going to hire a GM, you have to give them the opportunity to hire or fire, to bring in their own coach and grow with them. I think it's so stupid.
Yeah, not two to people do that. Don't do that. Jerry Richardson and Woody Johnson.
Yeah, that's right. And
those teams are historically awful.
Somebody else did it recently, too.
I bet it wasn't the Steelers, the Packers, the Ravens.
Steelers have had three coaches in 90 years.
One of them I went to college with.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Eddie Lacy. Did you see him for the Packers? He looked really good.
So he did look like BJ Raji.
No, and I don't know if Pete's our buddy Pete Prisco was at that game, the Rams Packers, and he filed his observation. I don't know if you read it, like when it came through on email. But he went and said, like, to me, if you know Pete or you followed Pete on Twitter, you know what Pete's like. And Pete will say whatever is on his mind to whoever is in front of him, right?
Yeah.
In a funny way. But so, like, his opening, he like basically walks up to Eddie Lacy in the locker room. He's like, hey, you're not very fat.
That sounds like Pete.
Right. And so Eddie Lacy, he's like, no, I think that was, just a bad angle. And, they talked for a while. And
I don't know if you were there, but the Super Bowl, we were at the Bud Light party waiting in line to get in with Eddie Lacy.
Mm-mm.
And he looked.
I was with you. That was Trent Richardson.
No. I think me and our buddy Brodsky, who works at CBS Sports.
You happened to run into another Alabama running back at the Bud Light Hotel?
Weird, I know.
That is weird.
But he was there. He was there along with a couple other rookies. And he looked. He actually looked a lot like Trent Richardson in terms of his build, and he didn't look fat at all. So I can't imagine he put on 60 pounds.
Nah. And he looked. I'll tell you what. He looked really good against the Rams.
Good for him.
Violent, physical runner, smashing into people, did a nice job. There's a GIF going around of where Robert Quinn sacks the hell out of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I mean, just destroys David Bakhtiari. But if you're watching the top end of it, you'll see Eddie Lacy come off his stance and just, smash into somebody. I was impressed with Lacy.
By the way, Jonathan Franklin, the fourth round pick, who a lot of people thought would be a second rounder or so. Sounds like he may not see a lot of playing time. So.
No. Eddie, Lacy's the guy. They trust him in pass pro.
He looks good to show you that we don't know a lot of what we're talking about.
And a scout told Bob McGinn that they got a steal, should have been a first rounder. Probably right, ultimately.
Yeah, there were concerns about his foot. So, whatever.
Sure. Let's see. Games that we may have missed.
We watched the Colts game, but it was boring. So, you have any previews for the Steelers? Redskins game.
Oh, yeah. RG3, baby.
No, you ain't playing.
I know. I'm joking.
Actually, you have me going.
Yeah, I know.
Shanny's already given up on the preseason. I just saw that.
He has?
I said Shanny has already given up on the preseason.
Right. He's like, I'm not worried about this. We'll come back next year. I don't know. I guess I want to see what Ben Roethlisberger does. Sure, why not?
Yeah, hopefully Le'Veon Bell plays. I'm not sure if he will.
That's who I want to see.
Hopefully Bakari Rambo can play better. Last week when he got torched by CJ 2K.
Yeah. Their secondary will be better. I think Amerson and Rambo will
grow. Amerson.
Yeah.
So, all right. We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Later. Yeah. No, yeah. We'll come back and recap. Previewing preseason games is kind of like.
It's worse than watching grass grow.
It really is.
Imagine having to listen to people previewing these games.
God almighty, how miserable would that be? You can do that often. And if you like, and it can come straight to your phone or straight to your computer, if you subscribe to the Eye on Football podcast on iTunes. On that note, we'll get out of here. In the meantime, subscribe. That's what I meant. For myself and Ryan Wilson, another episode in the books. We'll talk to you guys this week.